Hello and welcome to the 7th series podcast, where we talk about Ashtanga yoga and family life. The show is produced in Melbourne, Australia by me, your host, Gaynor Stanisic.
Hello and thanks for joining me. In this episode, I speak to Tina Bock. She's an authorised Ashtanga yoga teacher from New Jersey and is currently living in Abu Dhabi. Tina has been practicing yoga since her early 20s and established a strong self-practice when she wasn't able to find Ashtanga yoga teachers or studios where she lived. Tina shares her experience of pregnancy, birth and postpartum recovery, including not having the support of her family due to living abroad and experiencing anxiety when first becoming a mother, fearing for the safety of her son. If you're experiencing anxiety, please speak to your care provider or seek medical advice for your personal circumstance. I hope you enjoy this episode.
Hi, Tina. Thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
To start off with, are you able to tell us a little bit about where you live, what you do, and who's in your family?
Currently, I'm living in Abu Dhabi. I've lived here for almost 6 years now. I moved here after living in Montreal for a little bit. That's where my husband is from. I'm from New Jersey, from the U.S., and yeah, we moved out here 6 years ago, and we've been here since. I've been teaching yoga since 2012, so I came here as a yoga teacher, and I started teaching yoga right away when I came here. I do mostly private sessions here. It's a bit different than it was at home, just teaching studios, but we do have some yoga studios here, so I'm doing that as well. Currently not teaching Mysore because of the baby. So right now, who's in my family? It's just the three of us. So my husband and my baby, who's not really a baby anymore. He's 18 months, so he's turning into a child, which is scary. Just went from baby to toddler like overnight one day.
What took you to Abu Dhabi then?
My husband works for Etihad Airways. I mean, he just got this message on LinkedIn one day from a recruiter, and I don't know, we were like, should we move to Abu Dhabi? And then we just did. It was like totally random. We didn't know anything about this place or anyone here, but we just, you know, we've always wanted to live abroad, and I've always wanted to live abroad and travel. I barely did any traveling before I moved here. So, you know, lucky that we're here. We're on this side of the world now, close to a lot of other places. And when you're in North America, you're kind of far away from the world, as you can imagine, same as Australia. It's been great. We always say we want to move back, but I don't know when that will happen.
Who did you start your practice with, or how did you find Ashtanga yoga?
Okay, so I started practicing yoga when I was, I would say practicing. I started going to yoga practices, yoga classes when I was about 17 or 18 years old with my dad. He was taking some classes and he would take me every once in a while, and I really liked it. I thought it was great. And then I took a couple classes in university and I liked them, and it was good for me. You know, I liked stretching and, you know, doing all the crazy tricks and stuff because I was young and flexible. And then I found Hot Vinyasa Studio after I graduated university. So I was like 21. I started doing a lot of vinyasa and I really loved it. I'd never even heard of Ashtanga. Where I'm from, there was no Ashtanga. But I really loved yoga, and I just decided I wanted to be a yoga teacher. So I was 22 then, and I bought a ticket to India and I went to a yoga teacher training. That was a multi-style, quote unquote, training, and they had Ashtanga in it. And that's where I first learned Ashtanga. But we just kind of braised the surface of Ashtanga. I came back and I was teaching mostly vinyasa and kids yoga. And then when I moved to Montreal, there was a yoga shala there and I started taking Ashtanga classes. So Mark and Joanne Darby, they had a yoga studio in Montreal. But when I was there, they weren't teaching. There's another teacher called Terry. So I guess my kind of first proper Ashtanga classes were with her. But I was still doing vinyasa. And then we moved to Abu Dhabi and I just started doing Ashtanga by myself because I didn't have a teacher here or studios. So I just had self-practice and I kind of just learned how to do it myself. And Ashtanga was the best way to do that. And then I got really hooked after finally developing a home practice. And then I decided I should go to Mysore because I'm only a 4-hour flight and there was no Mysore program here. And I just had heard about Mysore style and that was the best thing I could think of. So I actually went on my first trip to Mysore and that was my first experience with Mysore style.
So how did you hear about Charat then? Like, or was it that you were going to go to India? And
no, I went to KPJ. I went my first year with Saraswati. I mean, just doing Ashtanga, doing my research and hearing about it online. I mean, I knew people through the grapevine who had went. I actually applied to go with Charat that first year. That was 2015. But I didn't really, because I didn't really have that many Ashtanga friends, I didn't know that you had to log in at midnight India time and apply then. I just thought it was the day that it opened. So I just applied on the first and I applied and I didn't get in. I was like, oh, that's crazy. I didn't get in. Like, I didn't know there were so many people who wanted to go. You know, I just heard that's the source and that's where to go. And so I ended up just going with Saraswati and it was great. And then the next year I decided I wanted to go with Charat. So I've been practicing with him since. So it's been 6 Mysore trips I've had.
What did you like about the Ashtanga practice and what kept you going back?
Well, what I really liked about it was how personal it was. I mean, I had been going to so many yoga classes because of moving around a lot. I moved around a ton before I came here, and I would just sometimes take a vinyasa class or just be upset and not like it. And, you know, just kind of, you never know what you're going to get, which was always upsetting for me, especially, I mean, as a customer too, as a student, like you go into something and you're expecting something else. And then you're like, what is this? What is this teacher doing? I don't know. So I liked Ashtanga because it was very personal. It was me. I knew it was going to happen, especially in a lead class, you know, like you pretty much know what to expect and that I could really grow in it physically. I mean, first thing, of course, was the asana that drew me in. So physically that I could really grow from it. I think that's kind of what got me hooked. And the fact that I could do it by myself, because any other practice that I tried, I couldn't just go on my mat and do it by myself, especially moving here and traveling and not having a teacher or a studio to go to or something like that. It was just the thing that kept me going.
When did you decide to have a family?
Well, I've been married since 2013. I don't know. I kind of always just decided when I turned 30, I would try to get pregnant. I don't know when I decided, but that's kind of, it would just kind of happened. I think it was the right time that my husband and I were kind of, I don't want to say settled here, but we were kind of just ready to do it. And we just decided, well, you know, what happens, if it happens, it happens. And I don't want to say we were super actively trying to get pregnant, but we weren't not trying, you know. I know a lot of people say that. But yeah, that's what we were doing.
So did you actually have to make a conscious decision in your practice or do anything different?
I actually didn't do anything in my practice. I had, we had started to try to get pregnant. I want to say maybe 6 or 7 months before I did get pregnant. And one of my teachers, Nea Ferrier in Dubai, and she told me, well, I've heard if you want to get pregnant, you should practice like you're pregnant. And I was like, oh, well, I'm not going to do that. I just like wasn't ready to do that. So I did not. And I actually got pregnant right after a 2-month long trip to Mysore where it was my 4th trip to Mysore. And I was kind of at that point where I felt like, I don't know, you're starting to get to know Charat and you're doing more asana. And I was like doing most of intermediate series then. And I felt really strong in my practice. So for me, I think it was kind of the opposite. I just felt really healthy and strong in my practice. And that's when I got pregnant.
How did you find out you were pregnant, or what were the first signs that you were pregnant?
Oh, I just got sick right away. I started waking up every day feeling like I was hungover, and I missed my period. So I was told my husband to go get a pregnancy test, and then we found out.
What point did you find out you were pregnant, and did you take the first trimester off?
So I think I was about a month along when I did find out, and I did and I didn't take it off. I did still practice, but it was very different, my practice. I've had morning sickness a lot. If I woke up sick, I would just, you know, either not practice or maybe just get on the mat, do some sun salutations and stretching. I did some vinyasa. Yeah, I mean, days I felt good, I did a really modified practice. I added a lot of swimming and walking. But yeah, I mean, I did. So the short answer is yes, but it was very different than my practice had been before I got pregnant.
I think when you're pregnant, you kind of take that, like the tapas out, like that heat, that intensity.
Yeah, exactly.
And you kind of back off a little bit in some way, like it's sort of an intuitive thing, or you just don't feel like it.
Right, exactly. It was both of those two things.
I probably should have asked you, so when you said you were at your strongest in your practice, what does your practice look like?
So when I had gotten pregnant, I had just started the first couple postures of third series. So I was like mostly just doing full intermediate and then just, you know, the first two poses. Now my practice, I am working more on third series since James has been one. Since the baby turned about one, then I started adding more back into and like learning more of the third series. So slowly, slowly.
And so how did you feel during your pregnancy? Did you have any complications or was it just a pregnancy that was quite smooth sailing?
I actually think it probably was quite smooth sailing. Besides all the morning sickness in the beginning, I was like really nauseous a lot the first trimester. Like I couldn't even brush my teeth without vomiting. After that, it felt good. I had a really energetic second trimester. I actually traveled a lot in my second trimester. I went to Bali and Vietnam and Singapore, and I went back to the US and I traveled. I did an intensive with Mark Roberts in my second trimester. It felt really great. And then I came back to Abu Dhabi in my third trimester. It was super hot here, so I just kind of was lazy, went walking and swimming a lot, did a lot of swimming. The third trimester was just slower, just low energy, but it's still good. No complications, just very, very low energy and tired towards the end, which I think is normal.
When you were practicing, so did you bring your practice back to more like an Ashtanga practice during your second trimester, third trimester, or how did your practice change?
Yeah, absolutely. I went back to a routine. Once it was like the day I was in my second trimester, I felt safer. I just felt safer to go back into really doing an Ashtanga practice. So I did sort of my normal practice. I would still do intermediate series, but I took out the obvious poses, you know, nothing on the belly, no twist. I added some things like doing cat and cow pose, and I would always do baddha konasana, you know, and just if I wanted to just sit there and do stretches, I would do that too. But yeah, for the most part, it was the same, but I just made modifications. So no jumping, no jumping through, jumping back, always stepping into things like, yeah, I do nakrasana, but I would just walk with my hands instead of jump. And so because I still really wanted to do everything, I felt good, but I was just careful about it.
What guided you? So was that your previous yoga knowledge or was that sort of guidance from a teacher that helped you through?
Probably a lot of it was guidance through, like we had talked about before we started. I had yoga sadhana for mothers. So in regards to modifying all the basic Ashtanga poses, you know, I knew not to do anything with a deep twist, not to do anything where pressure's on the belly. But besides that, for the most part, I didn't have a teacher when I was going through my pregnancy, besides practicing with Mark and Deepika, but that was just for a few weeks. Mostly I was doing self-practice and it was kind of just me deciding what to do, just listening to my body and doing what felt good.
Was Mark able to offer you any guidance when you were practicing with him?
He was, you know, actually I had signed up for the training because I was like, all right, Mark's going to teach me third series. It's going to be great. And I had been teaching a retreat that kind of lined up with his intensive. Like I was in Bali already teaching and it was just going to be like, I was there and it was going to be perfect. And then I found out I was pregnant and I really didn't know what to do. I was like, well, this is kind of a waste of time, waste of money. I wasn't sure. And then I had talked to some friends who had done intensives with him. And then I talked to him about it and I was convinced to still go. And actually it was great. I mean, he, for the most part, let me do my own thing, but he was experienced with having pregnant students. So I actually did feel confident with that. And it was helpful to have some guidance. A little bit of guidance, you know, where I was kind of just mostly blind the entire time. And I'm happy I did go because now I know Mark and Deepika and I'm connected with them and I've practiced with them again and hopefully practice with them again.
Yeah, he has extensive knowledge and experience in yoga. So I'd imagine he'd be able to offer a lot in your practice.
Yeah, it was great. I don't regret doing that at all. So I'm really happy I ended up doing it because I was really on the fence about it. Like, oh, should I go to a Bali to do an intensive when I'm in my second trimester pregnancy? But yeah, no, it was great.
So how long did you practice during your pregnancy?
Well, honestly, I feel like then I had a lot more time to practice in the day, you know, because when you're pregnant, it's just you, and especially there's a lot of activities you can't do. So Doing 2 hours of yoga a day isn't crazy when you're pregnant, but now it seems like it's a lot of time to have to myself. But yeah, I practiced until the day I gave birth. I was actually teaching the morning I went into labor.
Did you have your baby close to your due date?
He came 2 weeks early.
Oh.
Yeah, I was ready. I don't want to say I was kind of asking him to come out, but I didn't love being pregnant, to be honest. I am not one of those women that felt like a goddess or felt like she was glowing.
Earth mama.
I just loved being pregnant. I was like, oh, I feel fat. I just want to eat donuts. My feet are huge, you know. I wanted to not be pregnant anymore. I was like ready to go. So I walked to the yoga studio that I teach at. It's about, it's probably like a mile away. So I walked there and back. So I had walked really fast there and I taught my class. I walked back. I got a massage that day and I was drinking pineapple, you know, I was eating pineapples and made pineapple smoothies and had raspberry leaf tea and was bouncing on the birthing ball. All the things that they tell you to do to induce labor when you're late. I was like, I'm ready to go. Ready to go. So yeah, he came 2 weeks early, but it was fine. He was ready. I was ready. I mean, it was a surprise, but I felt totally ready then. So yes, my plan was to take off of teaching 2 weeks before my due date. But it just happened that to be like the last day I was going to teach was the day that I went into labor.
What preparation did you do for your birth? Like, did you have a specific idea? Like, did you want to have a home birth or a hospital birth, or what's the sort of landscape in Abu Dhabi in terms of how people have their babies? And then like, what kind of preparation did you do?
So I gave birth at a brand new women's hospital here. It's actually really nice. I knew I wanted to do a natural birth. So I had done a lot of research about, you know, just how to do that, or basically how to say no to everything that they offer you at the hospital. I knew I wanted to give birth with a midwife, so I gave birth with just a nurse and a midwife and my husband. I chose not to have a doula or a birthing coach or anything just because I felt like I didn't want more people in the room. I just wanted it to be a few of us. And I tried to train my husband to be my doula. We had a sort of a birth plan in terms of like what I didn't want, pretty much. But it ended up being fine. The midwife I had was amazing. The women's hospital was great. It was really nice. It's like a birthing center in a women's hospital here. Facilities are brand new. Everything in UAE is just new, so that's no surprise. Yeah, in terms of the natural birth, I actually think it went really well here. I had the nurses were very helpful, especially in terms of breastfeeding. They just taught me everything. Because I had no idea what to do. I mean, I had... And there's also lactation consultants there, but I ended up not needing one, which was great because the nurses were just so helpful. So I'm very thankful for that. But I did do some hypnobirthing and I listened to a lot of podcasts. Yeah, to be honest, the hypnobirthing I don't think worked for me personally. I think everything I learned from it just went out the window once I started going into labor because I just was screaming the entire time.
Tell us a bit about the hypnobirthing and why you didn't think that worked for you.
I just think I didn't know what to expect in terms of pain, and it was just very, very painful. I mean, not that if I could go back, I would use medicine or anything. I'm very happy that I did have a natural birth. Yeah, just I don't know. Maybe it was just at the moment, at the time. It just I felt like I just lost it, and I at one point really felt like I couldn't do it. And then everything I learned in terms of meditation and everything like that kind of went out the window. But to be honest, I mean, it probably didn't. Giving birth is one of those things, at least for me, I feel like I blacked out for most of it. So when people ask me about it, I'm like, I don't really remember. But I mean, maybe I didn't do enough of the classes. But I mean, it worked out in the end. But I don't think I had a very calm birth, if that even really exists. I think maybe I had... thought that that could be an option, but for me it just wasn't.
What were your first signs of labor?
My water broke. I had no contractions, so I actually didn't want to go to the hospital right away because I didn't want to just be waiting around. So I wanted to wait until I had contraction. So my husband and I actually like went out to get food, and then we came home and we packed, and then we walked down to the car park and we got in the car and we tried to start the car, and the car battery was dead because my husband was in the car the night before putting the baby seat in the car. So yeah, so we had a dead car, and then so we had to call a taxi, and then it just kind of from there escalated. Like, okay, so we took a taxi to the hospital, and from there it was pretty quick. It's funny because it hasn't even been that long, but these are things that I forget. I think I had about 12 hours of labor. We got to the hospital around 10 p.m. and then I gave birth around 5 a.m.
That's quite a short time, isn't it?
Yeah, and it was. And I think, a lot of that was because I was having contractions in the taxi. And I really waited to the last minute to get to the hospital. I mean, again, in hindsight, it worked out, but I probably should have went a little bit earlier.
And then when you got to the hospital, did you meet your midwife there? Was that a private midwife or was that one just that the hospital assigned?
Yeah, it was. She was assigned by the hospital. I hadn't met her before, which was a little scary, but she was amazing. Her name was Sasha and she was from Scotland. The nurse I had was also, I had a nurse from the Philippines. She was also great. And the two of them were amazing. Yeah, I didn't have anyone before. I did have an OBGYN who I was seeing, but I didn't feel like I needed or wanted her at the birth. She did come for the last kind of stint of the birth, and then she came to check on us after. But for the most part, the birth was done by this midwife.
Did you do any classes beforehand that sort of helped your partner be prepared, or what was his preparation coming into the birth?
No, we didn't do any classes. I had wanted to, but then we didn't end up doing them. I made him listen to podcasts and I made him write out a birth plan with me. And we basically talked about what would happen if I wasn't able to answer for myself. Basically, it was saying no to a lot of things. I feel like giving a natural birth really was just a lot of denying everything. If you're giving birth in a hospital, of course. So, you know, just in terms of just telling them, you know, I definitely don't want this and I definitely don't want this. And if they're, because a lot, at least in this hospital, and I don't know if it's the same in other countries, but they would tell you, okay, we're going to give you this now. And they tell you, but they don't ask you. They say, I'm going to give you this now. And I would have to say, well, do I need that? And then they would say no. And then I would ask the midwife, I said, do I need this? Did you have this? Because she had told me that she had two natural births. And I was like, okay, great. So I'm just going to do what you did. So I said, did you take that? She was like, no. I was like, okay. So just a lot of saying no to things.
I think that's really good information, because I know in Australia, and I think it is the same across the world in different countries, that all of those things will get offered. And it is really up to you and your birth partner to just say no if that's the course that you want to take, or it gets offered really early so that seed's planted in your mind. And then when it does get offered later on, when you're sort of not coping, it's a lot easier to go, oh, yeah, I'll take that.
Absolutely. Yeah, because if you do give birth in the hospital, you just have to kind of think of it as, you really are a customer at the end of the day, and they're trying to sell you things, really. I don't even know the names of some of these. I don't know. I don't want to say if they're drugs. I don't even know. Like, after I give birth, something to help me bleed less, and I said, well, do I really need that? I mean, I didn't tear or anything. And they said, no, you don't need it. Okay, so I don't want it. Even just pumping fluid, putting the, what do you call it, in my arm, just to pump in water. I didn't want that attached to me. I said, no, I don't want anything attached to me. Do I have to have that? And they said, no. I said, okay, so I'll just make sure that I'm drinking water the whole time. It was hard, but just saying.
Did you have any challenging points where your partner or your midwife had to step in and intervene?
Oh, no. I don't know if the midwife would have been allowed to say no. And actually, no. Luckily, once I was really just like in so much pain, it was past the point of me having an epidural or anything else. Yeah. I mean, what they did actually like bring in the room was the gas mask. What do you call it? I'm like blanking on the names of things.
Is it just the gas?
The laughing gas? Is it nitrous oxide?
It is, correct.
Yeah, okay. So that's something I had like, I thought about it and I actually like put it on for a second. I was like, okay, maybe I need this. And the second I put it on, I felt like I was suffocating and I was like, no, I can't do that. It's just like, I felt like I couldn't breathe. So I was like, okay, no, I don't want this.
Apparently with the gas as well, a lot of it's about just focusing on your breathing. So mm-hmm. Did you draw on any of your yoga experience to help you through?
I definitely think that pranayama and just having a good breath practice helped me for sure. Just knowing how to breathe deeply and calmly and just continuing to breathe and trying to connect breath with my movements. So when you're pushing, you know, like really trying to push out and breathe, exhale at the same time, for sure that helped me.
Even though you don't realize, like if you've been practicing yoga, I think the physical is a lot stronger.
Oh, for sure. And even in terms of just flexibility, like, I mean, I gave birth pretty much with like my thighs up as close as they could get to my chest and like my legs up. So, I mean, a lot of people couldn't even get into that position. So just being able to move around too, like I had an idea that I was going to kind of give birth in like a squatting position, and I tried that, and then I tried on my hands and my knees and none of that worked. So just being able to move around, because I know some people can't even move around in the birth. So for sure that helped.
And was that something that you'd read about before you or heard about before you went into labor, as sort of that active birthing kind of, you know, keeping moving, or was it something that your midwife at the time suggested?
No, that was something that I had kind of looked at before. I had seen the birthing positions and I kind of had an idea of how I wanted it to go. But then I also knew when I got in there, I would just kind of do what felt right at the time. Like in terms of just kind of doing the squat position, like I remember I was gripping the, I don't know what they're called, the handlebars or the bars. Like I was just gripping them so hard that my arms were just shaking. And at one point I just had to be like, okay, this isn't going to work. So then I just sat back and then I put my legs up, and then that's how I ended up giving birth. So I did have an idea, but I mean, you never really know until you're in it, how it's going to go.
So what position were you in when you gave birth to your son?
So I was sitting and my legs were up in the stirrups.
And was that one that you felt comfortable with, or was that something that you were guided into?
No, that's kind of, I did feel comfortable doing it. I didn't think that, I mean, I never want to do, I'm just the type of person that always wants to do something different. I never really thought I would just give like a classic birth in the classic position. But at that point I was so tired, and then just kind of sitting down and just being in a kind of normal position really relaxed me more to be able to push, do the last push.
Did you go through transition, and did you have one of those moments?
I definitely had a moment where I was yelling that I could not do it anymore. I was like, I cannot do this anymore. I need a break. And they were like, the midwife was, she was good, because she was like, there's no break. You don't get a break. You got to push. Like, you can't just stop, you know, you can't just take a break in labor because the baby's coming. So I do remember that. I feel like I blacked out during the birth, but I do remember at a point thinking I was not going to be able to do it. And then the midwife yelling at me to just push. And then I did. And then he came.
And did you already know you were having a boy, or was that a surprise when he was born?
I knew he was a boy. I am not great with surprises. So I was like, tell me as soon as possible.
And so after he was born, what happened then? Do they encourage the skin to skin?
Yes. Yeah, we did that for sure.
And did your baby do the boob crawl, or did you have to sort of work on doing some boob feeding?
We had to work on the breastfeeding. It wasn't easy for me. But like I said before, I had the nurses there were amazing with helping. Like, no shame. Like, the nurse just came over, like, grabbed my nipple and, like, helped me do it and just taught me the positions and everything. And she was really just the best teacher, because I had no idea what I was doing in terms of breastfeeding. You know, you don't really know how hard it is until you're there and you're holding this very, very small baby and you're trying to position them perfectly so that they can put their mouth in your boob, and like your shoulders are all awkward and you can't relax, and then you use a pillow, and it's very hard when they're really small. Thinking back to that now, because now my son is so big, he just kind of sits in my lap, and then his head is like the height of my boob, so he's heavy now, so it's not that it's that much easier, but like they're so small at first, you have to just hold them. And
it's definitely a common misconception, isn't it? It's like, oh, breastfeeding's so natural, but it's actually quite challenging to learn how to breastfeed.
Yeah, I can definitely see how it's easy for mothers to give up, because it is really hard. And I mean, of course, at the end of the day, it's better if the baby is fed. But that is one thing I had to tell them no a few times. Well, you know, the baby's not gaining any weight, we should give him formula. Yeah, there were actually quite a few times where I did have to say no, like, let's just wait a little bit longer, just wait a little bit longer. And then it ended up being fine. But I do remember them at that hospital saying like, well, maybe we'll just do a little formula for now. And I was like, no. Because it is scary, you know, you want your oh my God, you want your baby to eat. And when, of course, when they're at the hospital and they're just telling you to just give them formula, you know, a lot of mothers would not know what to do at that point.
And then what was your recovery from the birth itself like?
Yeah, I didn't have any tearing, luckily. My recovery was good. I was bleeding for, I don't know, 3 or 4 weeks. And, you know, it felt very painful and it was hard to walk for a while. But I think in terms of recovery, I'm lucky that I recovered pretty quickly because I didn't have any tearing or complications.
The other thing that you talked about is that your son had a bit of jaundice and you had to stay in hospital for a few days.
Yes. Yeah, he had jaundice. So we had to stay, which is actually quite common for babies that come a little bit early. So he had jaundice. And so we stayed in the hospital for about a week, maybe a little bit less. There was at one point where we came home and then we went back to the hospital. So jaundice is when they just have a, I'm going to probably botch this, there's a little yellow discoloration in their skin and I think it's from a lack of vitamin D. So they have to be in this UV light. It's basically like a tanning bed for babies. So yeah, that was at the point too where they were telling me we should give him formula. So that was rough. But at the end of the day, I had a lot of support with other mothers who were telling me that they also went through that too. So at the same time, I wasn't extremely worried about it. And like I said, we were lucky because the hospital is very nice, very clean and very new, and the food wasn't horrible. And we had a lot of delivery food, which was good. So staying there for a few days after wasn't the end of the day, but we really were very excited to come home after being there for almost a week.
So was your partner able to stay with you at the hospital during that time?
Yeah, he was, yeah. Yeah, that was great because that would have been horrible if he was not allowed.
I just mentioned it before. If people want to know a little bit more about your background and your journey with yoga, you have done a podcast with Taylor Hunt on the Heartbreak Kids. And in that podcast, you talked a little bit about that you suffered from, was it postnatal anxiety?
I did. And, you know, I feel like I still do. I mean, I definitely had a lot of anxiety after giving birth. And you go through so many hormonal shifts. I mean, everyone talks about when you're pregnant, you're feeling really hormonal and you go crazy, your hormones change. But for me, it was really postpartum. So just after the birth and just the hormones changing and the night sweats and just having this new life that you have to take care of and making sure that you are feeding them and doing everything right. And it's a lot of pressure. And we gave birth abroad, so I didn't have any family here. So that was hard. I mean, we have friends and we have a lot of support here, but it's just much different. Like I felt, besides my partner, my husband, who was amazing, I just felt like him and I were alone. And then his mom and dad came to visit like a month later and it was like, oh, thank God. It was very nice to have a family eventually come. But yeah, the anxiety is hard and I still feel like I have that sometimes. I mean, sometimes I can just like picture the worst case scenario of something happening. Like we have a balcony and I'm just terrified of it. I'm like, I don't know. Every day I could just picture him falling off somehow. Because so many things can happen. And I was really, I was really afraid of SIDS as well. Like that was just something that also really gave me a lot of anxiety to think about.
Was the postnatal anxiety diagnosed or was it just a feeling that you had?
No, it wasn't diagnosed. I mean, I also didn't seek any professional treatment for it. But no, yeah, definitely just a feeling. And a lot of other mothers I've talked to also feel the same. So I do think it is quite common. I do think that depression and anxiety is quite common. I read like something 1 in 3 women will experience postpartum depression or anxiety. And I feel like it's probably higher than that because a lot of people don't seek help about it.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it is very common. And there's so much pressure because you're trying to learn this new baby. We used to have our first son in our room with us and he would be making like really loud noises and we're like, is he choking? Is he dying? Yeah. And then he would just stop and you're like, has he stopped breathing? Like, do I need to check him? Like this whole cycle of...
I mean, just Googling everything. Yeah, with the sleeping too, it's like I mean, we had a baby monitor and I remember in the first month or two, I wouldn't even use it because I just, you know, he was in our room as well. And even when he was taking naps, I would just like watch him. you know, because you read so many things like what not to leave in the crib with them, and then all these things are happening to these infants, and it's terrifying.
Were there certain times that were worse in the first 6 weeks, or was it sort of on and off through the first year, or when was it the worst?
Straight in the beginning, the hormonal shifts are really hard because your body's just kind of doing a flip from being pregnant then to not being pregnant. I mean, there are just so many weird things that are happening with your body. You're bleeding it's like you have your period for a month, and then you're waking up in the middle of the night, even though you're already waking up in the middle of the night for the baby. But then again, you're waking up in the middle of the night and you're covered in sweat. You know, you've got all this extra skin on you from being pregnant and you're not pregnant, and everything is just weird. And so that's was definitely part of it in the beginning. In terms of being easier, I guess it does get easier, of course, with time. As the baby gets older, now I can leave him in his room by himself to sleep, and I'm not constantly checking the baby monitor or running over to see if he's still breathing. But it always is with me, because especially now he's more active. He's always running and he has no fear, and he's just jumping on the coffee table, and there's just so many things that could happen, and I always have that in the back of my mind.
It's hard to know, isn't it? Like, what's natural concern for your child as opposed to like where that line of anxiety lies? Do you feel the difference in those two things?
Yeah, I do. Yeah, like you said, even just any little thing, like a little rash or something in the beginning, you're just like, what is that? And you're Googling everything and you don't know. But I do think it has shifted to a little bit lighter. Now it's getting easier for me to just kind of let things go and just know that babies are babies and every baby is different too, and we're just doing the best we can.
Do they have mothers groups where you are, where like people in your area get together and they all get to talk about their child and they've all sort of had babies around the same time?
They do. I have not done that though. I do. We go to some like mommy and me classes, which is nice. And I have friends who have babies who are the same age as James. So I do have some support, which is good. And actually my sister and two of my cousins have babies the same age as James back home, which is very helpful because it's all of the three of them. It's their second baby. It's my first baby. So I'm just like constantly asking questions.
And so are there triggers, like if you have a lack of sleep, do you know the things that sort of will bring out that anxiety more?
Yeah, definitely lack of sleep is for sure one of them. I mean, hormones is a big one. Now I'm getting my period again, so hormones is a big, big one. But no, I mean, for the most part, it just can come at any point, really. A lot of times I just have like these visions, like if we're going on walks and I see James go to do something, I could just foresee something terrible happening, like a set of staircase, like him falling down or something. So yeah, it's really at any time.
Do you have like a little bit of a self-care plan kind of a thing that, you know, when you sort of start to notice yourself that it's happening more, that you can do things to bring it back in check?
I do, yeah. And I mean, that's back to the practice. I mean, yoga and meditation is definitely... I mean, with that, I don't know honestly where I would be in my mental state. So for sure that helps me and has been helping me and will continue to help me. And I'm very thankful to have the practice in my life.
Talking about the practice, when did you return to practice after having James?
I waited to really practice until I stopped bleeding. I did do some Surya Namaskara here and there, and I would do some stretching, but I waited for probably a month until I could physically actually practice. Then it was really slow. Like I would just start doing standing series, and then just slowly I would just add on primary series, and every day I would add on a new posture and add on a new posture until he was 3 months. Then I feel like I started doing the full practice again, but it was still pretty modified, because I remember I actually took James to Mysore when he was 3.5 months. So he was still pretty young. And I was doing my practice, but I was still stepping back for a lot of the vinyasas. I wasn't doing all the jump throughs, and I was just taking things a little bit lighter because I was still breastfeeding then too. So a lot of postures I couldn't do in the beginning.
What were the postures that you had trouble with when you returned back?
Well, a lot of the binding and things were hard because you know, for your whole pregnancy, you're not doing any of those twists. Even just Marichal Senesi. I remember the first time I got the bind after giving birth, I was like, oh, awesome. But your body is just different. My body was just bigger and I wasn't used to doing those spinal twists. And anything with any pressure on the breasts was difficult and sometimes painful. So I would just avoid that. And in terms of strength, the body's just, it was just different. It was weaker. So I didn't have stamina either like I did before, or energy because the lack of sleep. So most of the postures, you know, in all of Ashtanga require you to have a lot of energy. So that's definitely a challenge, just being well rested enough to practice. So yeah, the practice for me was really slow in the beginning. I just did what I could. I would just practice when James was napping and whenever I felt okay. And it was never very long. I never really had to practice longer than an hour until I went to Mysore that first trip after 3 months.
Yeah, I think the baby dictates how long you get to practice when in those really early days, doesn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And sometimes I would try to, you know, nurse him and then put him down and then go back to practice again. But it's never the same. Like if you start your practice and then you stop to do something, it's never the same. It's really hard to get back into it.
It's also good to hear you say that you went back to Mysore at that time and that you were still, like, I think there's another common misconception that there's all this pressure when you're in Mysore. So it's nice to hear that you were able to still just do what was right for your body at that time.
Yeah, absolutely. And Sharat is really good with that. He kind of understands. Even this past trip now, like, he definitely doesn't put a lot of pressure on mothers at all, which is very helpful. You know, like we can go practice anytime that works. You know, if I didn't want to do catching because I had a shoulder injury from, you know, breastfeeding, my shoulders were super tight. And then, yeah, if I didn't want to do catching, didn't have to, it was fine. Like definitely understood a lot of that. He was okay with the fact that I was doing everything kind of just slowly. And even I would go to lead intermediate too, but I didn't do everything so hardcore.
How did you injure your shoulder?
Just from breastfeeding and holding the baby. And, you know, it wasn't actually too bad until he was about 6 months. And I took him home to the U.S. So we had a flight that was 16 hours or something like that. And I was like holding him a lot in one arm. And then just slowly that shoulder just started getting injured. And it was my rotator cuff. So I worked with the physio for a while and now it's sort of back to normal, thankfully. It's still a bit tighter. I have a lot less flexibility in my shoulders than I used to, but the injury is pretty much gone, which is good.
So did you do any other exercises before returning to your practice or sort of as you were building your practice back up?
Not specifically. I did have a physio who gave me some postnatal exercises that I did. I wasn't great with doing them consistently, to be honest. But I do a lot of walking, a lot of running just to build up strength. So I was doing that more than practice, I'd say, back in the day, especially with a new baby, you're just always in the stroller walking and just trying to stay active.
And do you observe the moon days?
Yes,
is that something?
Yeah. It's just like a free day off, so why not? And my period kind of syncs up with the moon days sometimes. So usually it works out like I'm got to take off anyway. Yeah, and I do feel different energies with the moon, so I just figured why not. But usually on the moon day I'll do something else. Like I'll go for a really long walk or I'll go swimming or I'll go paddleboarding or something else.
So you're saying that after a year you sort of started to build a little bit more intensity back into your practice. What inspired you to do that?
Well, I went to Mysore. So James was 1.5 when I went on my second Mysore trip with him. And then I, you know, because I'm a home practitioner, so I don't really, I guess, receive any postures until I go to Mysore. So once I went back to Mysore, then I was starting to learn more postures in the third series. So I did wait for a year until doing that because I was in no rush really. Because I'm not totally against anyone giving themselves postures. I think somewhere down the line I would do that, or you know, some people who are completely home practitioners can do that. But for me, it just felt like there was no rush. You know, I could wait a year to start anything completely new.
How does it all look now that your son's a little bit older? Have you returned to work?
Yes, actually, I started going back. Before I had the baby, I was doing yoga full time. So I I think he was maybe 5 months or 4 or 5 months. And I started just subbing some classes at the yoga studio because I also teach vinyasa, just to sub. And, you know, I still like it. That was what I taught before here. And I teach kids yoga too. So I would sub, you know, here and there on the weekends and a night when my husband could take the baby. And then I went back to teaching in this September. So he was 8 or 9 months old, maybe 9 months when I started having a consistent schedule, but still just working part-time. So I maybe would teach 2 classes a day, like no more than that. And we have a nanny. So I'm back to just part-time working.
You mentioned the kids yoga. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah. So actually I studied music in college. I was a music teacher for kids before I was a yoga teacher. And I had always worked with kids. I worked at a fitness center, like a gym for kids in university. And I was the manager at one point. I was like working full time for them. So I had always worked with kids. Yeah, it was just kind of a natural progression to start teaching them yoga because I was so used to teaching them anyway. So I do kids yoga, and I actually do training programs to teach people how to teach kids yoga, which is super fun because I get a lot of teachers and parents who just want to know how to teach just basic kids yoga. Of course, it's a lot different than Ashtanga. It's more about having fun and teaching children, you know, little bits about wellness and meditation and doing yoga asanas and things like that. But yeah, it's lots of fun. I love it.
How long have you been doing that for?
I've been teaching kids yoga since 2012. So right away when I started teaching adults, I picked up some kids classes.
Do you think that's helped you be a parent?
Yeah, absolutely. I was teaching mommy and me classes to children. We start age 6 months and then the classes go up to 13 years. So you do like mommy and me classes, and then they do just beginner gymnastics classes and fitness classes for kids. Not that I'm a gymnast or was a gymnastics teacher at all, but I did like the mommy and me classes. So I was very used to being around babies and used to being around parents and moms and just, you know, knowing how to be around children. So definitely that helped me.
Do you feel like being a parent has changed how you teach yoga?
Yes, because I actually teach a lot of mothers here, which is nice. I feel like I have more experience, and I actually did a prenatal yoga certification when I was pregnant, because I had actually done one before, but I never felt like I was ready to teach prenatal yoga because I was never pregnant. But now I feel like if I'm ever asked to sub a prenatal class, I can do it. And if a pregnant woman comes into my class, I know how to speak to her about it. Of course, you're not going to really know anyone's specific experience, but I definitely feel like I am more knowledgeable about everything in that aspect. You know, even just women returning to the practice after, and parents, absolutely.
What are some of the things that you think for your students, but also just what's important for mums out there or some of the Ashtanga practitioners that are pregnant, that are about to go through the pregnancy journey, motherhood journey? What are some of the things that you feel like it's good for them to know?
Definitely just to listen to yourself. I mean, it is good to have a good healthcare practitioner or to have support of other women and their experiences. But at the end of the day, we've all had different practices, especially in the Ashtanga community. We all have different practices. Our bodies are all completely different. Our pregnancies are all going to be different. So it's very hard to adhere to a set of rules. Like we were talking about before, there's the yoga sadhana for mothers, which has a great, it has all of the pictures and the sequences. And that's a good resource. But then again, it might not be for you. You might have a completely different practice. So just to know that everyone is different and you're your best teacher, but not to not seek help from the community too. Because I've actually connected with a lot of women in the Ashtanga community who have been pregnant just because I was posting about being pregnant. So people have questions for me, but you know, most of the time I can't really answer them because we're all different.
I think that's really good advice. I also like that you said too, just to listen to your own intuition. And I think that's really relevant, your birth experience as well. You know, you even said you had to keep saying no to different things that were offered. And it's like, yeah, you really have to sort of tune in and go, what is right for me at that time? So I think that's relevant across the board.
Yeah, especially now because we have so many resources. There is, you know, you can Google everything and just read anything on the internet. And whereas I always think about like, what did people do before Google? When they were giving birth, they just had to listen to their family or their friends and give birth how they felt like doing it. There, you know, weren't millions of podcasts and articles and birth specialists and all this craziness that there is now. Resources like you have now on the internet. Maybe you could go to the bookstore and get a book. Yeah, like you said, it's your own intuition.
Do you have any recommendations of really good books or podcasts that you listened to when you were doing your research?
I really like a birthing podcast called The Birth Queens. Have you heard of it?
No.
It's a doula and a midwife, and they just talk about giving natural birth, and they interview people. And that was my favorite one that I found.
We'll start to wrap it up there, but thank you very much for coming
on thanks for having
the podcast.
Me.
Please tell us how people can connect with you. You've talked about your Instagram, so what your handle is and how people can get in contact with you.
Yeah, that's probably the easiest way. It's just at Tina Bock. I have email. I have a website. But yeah, that's pretty much it. I also have Facebook too, but Facebook is the same as my Instagram, so you can find it through there, just Tina Bock Yoga.
Excellent. And we'll post all of that on the website so that people can connect with you through those social media platforms.
Perfect. Great. I'm excited.
Thanks for listening to this episode. Head to our website, seventhseries.net, for more information about the show and how to connect with Tina. You can contact me through the website if you have a guest you would like me to interview or you would love to share your story. To keep up to date with new episodes as they're released, subscribe through your favourite channels. Support the podcast and help us to reach more people by rating and reviewing the podcast. You can also share the podcast through your socials. Thanks for listening.